Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and the Major League Baseball All-Star Game has a new home. Of course, not going to be in Atlanta. Moved out of Atlanta, Georgia.
Let me guess, Milwaukee, like you said yesterday, maybe?
Not right. Milwaukee, Evers made an offer that apparently was rebuffed. Wuhan, not available. Hong Kong, off limits. So they settled on Denver, Colorado.
Oh, the Sunshine State.
And you know what Colorado has that Georgia doesn't?
Higher altitude.
Did you say Colorado's the Sunshine State?
It was a joke from the movie. What's it called?
What's
Wedding
the movie?
Crashers? What is the movie called? Well, he was talking about Denver or Colorado. He said the Sunshine State. What's really the Sunshine State is Florida, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right.
Let's sorry, I saw basketball.
Nail down those movie references.
I stayed up to watch the basketball game last night, so I'm a little
not
tired.
Much of a game.
No, it was very boring.
So to my question, Georgia, Colorado has something that Georgia doesn't. What is that?
Pretty much the same voter laws.
Democrat governor.
Oh, that's right.
The laws don't matter. The similarity is the requirement of a voter ID in order to vote in Colorado. That doesn't matter as long as you have a Democrat governor, because this is not about the substantive rules of the game. This is just about, power politics. And so there it is. Now, interestingly, there has been some entertaining pushback, if nothing else. I appreciate the governor, Greg Abbott in Texas, declining to throw out the first pitch in Texas for the Rangers home opener.
That was awesome.
That's a little chin music for the Major League Baseball. I appreciate that Marco Rubio asked whether Rob Manfred, MLB commissioner, will be resigning from Augusta National, where he's a member apparently. Did not know that.
Oh, I didn't either.
Until that was brought up, Rob Manfred, the MLB commissioner. I believe Augusta National is in the state of Georgia, Commissioner Manfred. Not to mention, per Keith Olbermann, the Masters, you know what that implicates. And this was a club that didn't have quote-unquote diversity until relatively recently. So how could Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred continue to enjoy his membership at Augusta? I think that's a wonderful question. If you can't visit it upon the institution, Major League Baseball, how about at least making some of the principals have to give up things that I'm sure they would be loath to give up? Augusta is no easy trick. That would almost, for me, maybe I'm too golf obsessed, seem like a victory if Rob Manfred had to resign from Augusta. I would feel like we got a pound of flesh for Major League Baseball. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Also, we have the Georgia GOP banning Coca-Cola from their offices.
I love it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, come on.
Strike where you can, I suppose.
Like, we're deciding what we drink by what political party we affiliate with. And I mean, it's so stupid. And the Democrats started this. And did you see the flip-flop that Stacey Abrams made? Did you see? She tweeted this out yesterday, a five-minute video. And basically she's saying, you know, we had to stand up for our rights and defeat this voter suppression of the black vote. But please don't boycott us. Please. I'm sorry.
I understand the passion of those calling for boycotts of Georgia following the passage of SB 202. Boycotts have been an important tool throughout our history to achieve social change. But here's the thing. Black, Latino, AAPI, and Native American voters whose votes are the most suppressed under SB 202 are also the most likely to be hurt by potential boycotts of Georgia. To our friends across the country, please do not boycott us. To my fellow Georgians, stay and fight, stay and vote.
Was that Winston Marsalis providing the background music?
I mean, nice. She didn't read, not even the woke, the woke like her starting to realize, oh my God, what did I unleash? Did she even read the bill and the law before she said, promoting boycotts? And then she does the flip-flop saying, oh, please don't come back. Well, they didn't come back. Because I actually thought after that tweet that MLB would come back to Georgia and have the All-Star game there. And I was wrong. Which is good because themselves in the foot.
Once you make sort of that public declaration, it's a done deal. Abrams didn't necessarily support boycott. She just opposed the law. So she wants it both ways.
Right. You can't have it both ways.
And, this is sort of like a tactical disagreement internally, and it's about some public posturing so that they're seen as, we're sticking it to the man, but, we're also wanting to protect you. I mean, it's all just flim-flammery. It's not flip-flopping. It's just flim-flammery. The whole thing is. The whole posture is. The whole philosophy is. It's a scam. The whole thing is a race. Notice how now we're folding in API, Asian Pacific Islanders are disenfranchised by voter ID laws. When did that begin? Oh, I guess that was folded into hashtag Stop Asian Hate. Look, this is all about continuing to use Trump and white supremacy, with Trump as the conduit to white supremacy, as the argument for everything, the claim for everything. White supremacy. I'm a victim of white supremacy. We're a victim of white supremacy. We need to eliminate whiteness. We need to eliminate white toxic masculinity, so on and so forth. It is one-stop shopping for the left. Everything redounds back to that. And they use boogeymen to essentially focus people's attention and their ire in advance of what they want. Whether it's a Major League Baseball All-Star game, whether it's a boycott or it's not a boycott, whether it's admission or not admission to a college, whether it's a contract or not a contract, whether it's a political office or not a political office, removing somebody from a political office, all roads lead back to this. And this is what they're obsessed about. And it should just be stripped away and distilled so it can be put to people straight away. That's all they have.
Yeah, but
it's not like identitarian politics in general. It is all roads. Everything in the world, in the history of the world, can be explained by whiteness and white supremacy.
312-642-5600. Turnkey DePro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. But what I would like to see is the mainstream media talk to somebody who's going to be victimized by this. I mean, $100 million in revenue lost. That's a lot. Well, no, that's a big deal. It's you're thinking a big concert's going to come and the concert got canceled.
So it's a game. So what? So, I mean, it's a game. It's one game. It's a stars that are fair. Or maybe it is, depending on where they play it. If it was here, it would be $100 because there's only, 8,000 people in the stands. Who knows? But the economic thing is sort of secondary. This just in for...
Well, those are Democrats who should wake up and see what their party's about.
Yeah, and frankly, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen any data research on this, but I would think a lot of the hardworking frontline workers, the vendors at baseball games and entrepreneurs that have stands and whatnot, I think they'd probably be more likely to lean right than left, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But, remember that the Republican Party in 2021 America is the working man's party. And I think a lot of working men and women are waking up to that. By the way, CBS News had an interesting couple of days with 60 Minutes hit job on DeSantis that 60 Minutes did, we'll get to. And then also reporting on three ways companies can help fight the Georgia election law.
They had a tutorial? Did I miss it?
I like this, though. Again, strip off the veneer and just show us who you are. Let's not pretend. Well, let's end this charade. You are a PR agency for the radical left, the identitarian left, and that's all you are. So 60 Minutes, we need to go after DeSantis because he's the bright, shining star in the GOP constellation. He's somebody who could present real problems for Democrat socialists in 2024 after he wins re-election governor in 2022.
Because he did it right in his state. Yep.
Let's go after him, and then let's provide some air support for those companies that are getting some backlash for throwing in with the identitarians. CBS. 48 hours in the life of CBS News. Chris and Carrie, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. I look at life like a pendulum, but it swings one way really hard. It's got to come back.
I don't think so.
It's so far left right now. I mean, look at society. Like in the 70s, the 60s gave way to the 70s gave way to, like, you know, you got the hippie movement. Then it gave way to glam rock in the 80s. That gave way to grunge, which gave way to the, you know. So when it swings so far one way, it's got to come back.
Let me stop you there. So think about that, but not in a musical sense. Think about that over the last 50 years. As things have swung towards attack on institutions that are the bedrock of Western civilization, family, the church, private property, over the last 50 years, have you seen the pendulum swing back, or does it just incrementally continue to swing further and further left?
Well, it's been swinging further left, but I feel like they're getting so extreme, they're going to start turning off people. I mean, Trump, the hate of Trump can only last so long, I feel like.
But they find a new boogeyman. Thanks for the call, Chris. I caught what you said about Bill Maher. I didn't mean to talk over you, but the Bill Maher thing, you know, this is like, right, it's too much for my sensibility. Also, Bill Maher probably sees a market opportunity, you know, separate yourself from the leftist horde and you'll look like you're even-handed, and you'll also get more attention because you're coming to it from the left as one of the cultural mavens who's brought us to this point, and now you're decrying where we are. Yeah, I don't place much stock in Bill Maher's pronouncements, but in terms of the Trump hate, yeah, I mean, it'll dissipate over time, depending on what his political future is, and then they'll find a new boogeyman.
Well, isn't there a new boogeyman?
And we'll continue down the same road to serfdom we've been on for, since FDR.
Don't you think their new boogeyman, though, is Ron DeSantis?
Yeah, but it's not yet. He's somebody they want to take out before they have to treat him like a boogeyman, because he's going to be tougher to Trumpify than Trump is, by definition. They want to, strangle DeSantis in the political crib, if you will, before the nation really gets a handle on him, before the Florida success story is well known to be a success story. So they need to essentially, the success story is real. The media's job is to debunk it. Ron DeSantis' political fortunes are on the rise. The media's job is to ground them. Simple as that. Greg in LaGrange.
Hey, good morning, guys. Morning. A couple quick things. This game is going to continue until the left is called out on it. I don't see the pendulum switching anyway until there's a tremendous pushback. The second thing that was kind of interesting is Janet Yellen talking about getting a minimum corporate tax base around the world, while you have Joe Biden saying we have to raise taxes, almost as if Yellen has her arm twisted behind her back saying, oh, please, since we're going to be disadvantaged, can we disadvantage everybody else around the world? And the last thing is, think about it. The game's going to be at Mile High Stadium. And how many people are going to be there? And Mile High Stadium is a little bit less, is a little thin in oxygen, and they're all going to be wearing masks? That's what I think is pure justice. I'm all for everybody disclosing their positions And I'm all for telling everybody that wants to go against the tenets of Western civilization, I don't want your money, I don't want your time, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to do anything with you, because you are out to destroy civilization. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Greg.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And we were talking about before Mike Scott's newscast, and that is the 60 Minutes hit job on Ron DeSantis on Sunday night. Sharon Alfonsi, six. Hey, no.
Hey, I got Alfons. A guy. Oh, my gosh, we're so rude. Why are you trying to bust my onions, Dan?
Yeah.
You taught me that one, by the way.
Bust your onions?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sharon Alfonsi, yo. she's a 60 Minutes correspondent who was dispatched to Florida to snoop around for 3 months to see what dirt they could dig up on DeSantis so I could put together a hit piece to start undermining the Florida success narrative that is obvious to the hordes of Americans moving to Florida. But nonetheless, the thing they settled on was there's some pay-to-play scheme going on between Governor DeSantis and the Publix grocery stores with respect to vaccine distribution and contracting for, and that's the story. So this is what this is what 60 Minutes aired, and then we'll hear the fuller context that they edited. Sharon Alfonsi, yay!
We wanted to ask Governor DeSantis about the deal, but he declined our request for an interview. We caught up with him south of Orlando.
Publix, as you know, donated $100,000 to your campaign, and then you rewarded them with the exclusive rights to distribute the vaccination in
Palm
Beach.
So first of all, what you're saying is wrong.
How is that not pay to play?
That's a fake narrative. I met with the county mayor, I met with the administrator, I met with all the folks at Palm Beach County, and I said, here's some of the options. We can do more drive-through sites. We can give more to hospitals. We can do the Publix. And they said, we think that would be the easiest thing for our residents.
But Melissa McKinley, the county commissioner in the Glades, told us the governor never met with her about the Publix deal.
The criticism is that it's pay to play,
Governor. It's wrong. It's a fake narrative. I just disabused you of the narrative, and you don't care about the facts because obviously I laid it out for you in a way that is irrefutable.
Well, I
and so it's clearly not.
Isn't there the nearest Publix?
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. Yes, sir.
That's actually a fact.
And so here's what DeSantis added in that exchange.
That was cut out.
This is important because what was the accusation? Remember the accusation? Exclusive contract to Publix after they made a donation to your campaign.
Yeah, of $100,000.
Here's DeSantis providing the context that 60 Minutes cut out for obvious reasons.
As we got into January, we wanted to expand the distribution points. So yes, you had the counties, you had some drive-through sites, you had hospitals that were doing a lot, but we wanted to get it into communities more. So we reached out to other retail pharmacies, Publix, Walmart. Obviously, CVS and Walgreens had to finish that mission. And we said, we're gonna use you as soon as you're done with that. For the Publix, they were the first one to raise their hand, say they were ready to go. And you know what? We did it on a trial basis. I had three counties. I actually showed up that weekend and talked to seniors across four different Publix. How was the experience? Is this good? Should you think this is the way to go? And it was 100% positive.
So that's a little bit different than the accusation. Oh, by the way, the county mayor that he referred to, that he spoke with, Dave Kerner, is the county mayor of Palm Beach County, Florida.
A Democrat.
He issued a letter. I watched the 60 Minutes segment on Palm Beach County last night and feel compelled to issue the statement. The reporting was not just based on bad information. It was intentionally false. I know this because I offered to provide my insight into Palm Beach County's vaccination efforts and 60 Minutes declined. They know that the governor came to Palm Beach County and met with me and the county administrator, and we asked to expand the state's partnership with Publix to Palm Beach County. We also discussed our local plans to expand mass vaccination centers throughout the county, which the governor has been incredibly supportive. We asked and he delivered. They had that information and they left it out because it kneecaps their narrative.
So what should happen now? Should they do, a retraction on this Sunday's upcoming Sunday show? Tell people the truth.
The Fon should be kicked off of Happy Days, that's for sure. Here's Ron DeSantis on Tucker Carlson last night. And listen to this distillation of the whole episode, plus an explanation of the vaccination program that Florida embarked upon. And tell me this is not an executive with a lot of upside potential. I'll just say it this way.
3.5 million senior citizens. We were the first state to say we're doing seniors first. We're not going to follow the CDC's recommendation. And what we have done has worked. And they didn't want to discuss that. And obviously, they selectively edited the background. They tried to act like there was a conspiracy with Publix, ignoring the fact that other pharmacies were involved before Publix doing all our long-term care facilities, and ignoring the fact that I met with the county mayor, who's now is a Democrat, who said what 60 Minutes has done is bunk. But Palm Beach calculated 90% of their seniors live within 1.5 miles of a Publix. So when we put it in there, their numbers started going through the roof, so it succeeded there. But what they didn't tell you also, Tucker, is when there was a need in a more rural part of the county, like near Lake Okeechobee, we set up a separate site in a small town called Pahokee. They didn't tell you that. They didn't tell you that we were doing African-American church vaccination drives before Publix ever gave a single shot. They didn't tell you that. They didn't tell you that hospitals were doing shots starting in the third week of December because it didn't fit the narrative. They don't believe in facts. It was a political narrative. It was done with malicious intent and a reckless disregard for the truth. They would not talk to the people who were most relevant to this because they know those key Democrats, Jared Moskowitz, Mayor Dave Koerner, would blow up their narrative. So they just put their head in the sand and pretended like those facts didn't exist.
Boom, drop mic.
Pretty much. And by the way, Publix was also slimed in this by 60 Minutes, so we should hear from them. Publix issued a statement. Yep. The irresponsible suggestion that there was a connection between campaign contributions made to DeSantis and our willingness to join other pharmacies in support of the state's vaccine distribution efforts is false and offensive. We're proud our pharmacy associates we're proud of our pharmacy associates for administering more than 1.5 million doses of vaccine to date and for joining other retailers in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia to do our part to help communities emerge from the pandemic. The other thing this goes to with respect to the underlying issue of the vaccination programs, the states that have been the most effective and were most quickly the most effective are the states that we've talked about this, that relied on their pharmacy infrastructure, the private sector infrastructure already set up, yep, that already has experience in this space, that has customer relationships at the local level, from West Virginia to Florida, that relied on the CVSs and the Walgreens and the Publixes. So there's this other piece of it, too, that's been underappreciated, which is 60 Minutes being part of the big government media. You know, they're opposed to anything that isn't the diktat of a central planner. So again, they want to undermine DeSantis, but they also want to undermine DeSantis's philosophy and the philosophy of other governors who said, "Let's go private sector. Let's enlist partners who know what they're doing. Let's not suffer from the hubris of like Cuomo in New York, nipple rings Gambino, that we can just run this through a government agency and that we know better, and a small cadre of us can operate this big this big program, can successfully complete this massive undertaking." And that's a important part of it, too. Undermine the philosophy of a free marketeer like DeSantis, not just undermine DeSantis as a potential presidential candidate. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Oh, a rare call. I think he only gets about one a quarter.
Wow.
The Amish texter is on our Amish texter tin cannon string line.
String line.
Yeah, Amish texter.
I had to kick Lisa off the telephone pole to make the call. But anyways, I wonder if that reporter at the Fonz for 60 Minutes, if she used the same typewriter that Dan Rather Not used to type up the four false letters about George W. Bush's National Guard service.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Maybe they shared the same office. Yeah.
It was handed down to her, bequeathed from Rather to the Fonz. Yeah. I think we could coin the term Sharon, her nickname is the Fonz.
Yeah, definitely.
I haven't heard anybody else do that yet. You need to get a Fonzie job.
She should be suspended. Everybody should write her a letter or call her on her direct line.
Well, I mean, if you suspend her, if you suspend her, you have to suspend the entire news department, which would be a good start. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Oh, thanks, Dan and Amy, for taking the call. Man, this gets more disgusting every time you hear about this state-run media thing, but this here takes the cake, and there should be a way to basically really just take this example and publicize this thing super, make just on what you just laid out and show exactly what DeSantis really said and the whole thing, and just show how rotten and corrupt and just an enemy of the people that this media system is. I get sick listening to it now.
Thanks for the call, Craig. I mean, hopefully, I mean, I don't think it's going to have the staying power of the Dan Rather, George W. Bush National Guard record issue, you know, that fabrication, because I don't think her career is going to be I don't think her career is going to be negatively impacted by this story. And I don't think 60 Minutes will be negatively impacted because this is the business they're in now. You know,
just pushing their narrative.
Yeah, it's straight up all the time. Trump may be gone, but their approach to the news, what's changed?
Why are they so repulsed by the Republican Party, though? What is it? I mean, I worked for it for 20 years, that beast, and again, always tried to get a Republican angle if the, you know, you're covering a Democratic candidate, and they weren't interested.
Yeah, but
they
you
didn't care. Like, we'll go try and find someone.
Well, okay. Well, right. So it's always been 90% left, but now it's just shed any pretense of objectivity. And again, right after Trump's inaugurated, the old rules are over. The old rules are done. We're not going to provide any pretense of fairness. They say objectivity. What they're really saying is fairness. This is the Lester Holt snippet from last week. You know, we don't need to give equal weight to both sides. We're not going to pretend that both sides are of equal value. It's based on the merit. Well, sure, that's true. Yeah, I agree with that philosophically. But how they use that is to say the side that we disagree with that runs counter to our personal viewpoint is the side that we don't have to give equal weight to, that the side that we can be unfair to.
And it's that's the side we're going to ignore.
And here's what else is happening. You know, this is where the K through college system comes into play. So the last 10, 15 years of J school students that have gone into media, or even just, you know, your standard issue liberal arts student who goes into media of some sort. I mean, think about their education from kindergarten through college, but particularly at college. It is all training you to be a political activist in whatever your calling is. So you could go work for a tech company. You still have to make sure that you make time to be a political activist of the left. You can be in journalism. Hey, really there you need to be a political activist because you have a platform.
And they're encouraging graduates, you know, if you don't know where to go, move to a blue state and try and turn it, or move to a red state and try and turn it blue. That's what bothers me.
Well, I mean, it's all in furtherance of political activism on behalf of the left. Everything is politics, all the time politics. John in Urbana, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, I just like to point out that voter ID laws disenfranchise vampires. They don't cast a reflection in the mirror, and they cannot be photographed. Everybody knows this.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
Let me grab my garlic. Okay.
Something weird is happening down in Urbana this morning. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey!
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. It's election day, and the polls are now open, 6 a.m.
Woohoo!
Are you going to get out and vote for local in local school board races, municipal races, township races, your local government, particularly schools, but municipality and township as well. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. We want to make this a bit of an open mic Friday, but an open mic Tuesday specifically for candidates or their supporters from around Chicagoland who want to weigh in and encourage people in one direction or another in any of the races in their community. I've said this for a long time, and I repeated it the other day. You're not going to turn around the state of Illinois.
No.
You're not going to turn around the country if you cede control of your community to the radical left, which so many communities, particularly suburban communities in Chicagoland, have done. So, you know, we're going to focus on everything that's happening in D.C. or everything that's happening at the state level and not pay attention to our local schools, to our municipal government, to our township government. That doesn't work. That plays right into the kleptocracy that has afflicted Illinois and made it the worst governed state in the history of America. So you want to start to reassert control. You want to tell Dan to stop being so cynical about Illinois. Then why don't you prove up to your neighbors and to the rest of the state that you can regain common sense in your community if you're one of those who lives in a community, and that's most of them in Chicagoland, who basically have lost their minds and turned them over to the left.
And a lot of people are getting involved that never even attended school board meetings before these lockdowns happen. And then they realize how their tax dollars are being spent. They realize that, oh my gosh, they have so much power and control. They have more control over my children than I do. And they're so lucky. If you can vote today, my God, you're so blessed. Because in Chicago, we can't vote because we don't have an elected school board. It's appointed. And that might be a good thing, because if it was an election, the CTU would take over with their cronies and fill it up then. But still, the fact that you can vote, and you know there's mayoral races also going on, please go and vote. This is, you can complain and biatch all you want, but today's your day when you have a voice to make a change. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. And the school board's scared. I'm sorry, they're scared. That's why they opened up school yesterday. A lot of the school districts did, to show parents, oh no, we do care. We do want your kids back in school. Please don't fire me from my job. That's what this is.
Speaking of mayors, Evergreen Park, I mean, just to pick one to highlight what we're discussing. Evergreen Park, Kelly Burke is running for mayor there. She's a state representative. She is, you know, basically a Southwest Side Madigan flunky. Now, like all the Democrats, pretending that she wasn't.
Of course.
And she's running for mayor, so she's going to be your state legislator and your mayor.
Oh, she can do both?
Well, she can. That's been done before. You see the Shaw brothers there in Dalton.
Oh, that's right.
So tell me again, blue collar, you know, hard work in Evergreen Park, and you're just going to let these identitarian goons, what, because she's Irish?
Don't mess with
and,
Irish.
And their kleptocratic friends run roughshod over your life. Is that right? The big tough guys. This is the same conversation we've had before. All these tough guys and blue collar guys in these hardworking suburbs that are lorded over by P hats. And P hats who do great damage to your economic opportunity and who do great damage to the quality of, for example, sticking with schools, education your child has access to. You're just going to let them run roughshod like you've been doing for, what, the last 50 years in this state? It's a question. I know we have candidates stepping up. We've interviewed a lot of them, tried to profile as many races as we can, particularly those that have, you know, applicability throughout the region, and so many of these school board races do for exactly the reasons that Amy was just saying.
Yeah, we even put out a bat signal to incumbents. You know, if you tell us why people should vote for you again.
I mean, you know how bad some of these people are, including, you know, running all over the place. Barrington Hills Observer piece about the bare-knuckled brawling that's going on for District 222 school board. Yeah, you know, local politics, people think, oh, that's so nasty campaigns. Most people really only pay much more attention to what's happening at the federal or state level. Oh, nasty campaigns because you see it on TV and the TV ads attacking. The whisper campaigns it's and worse. Now the social media campaigns at the local level are much more vicious because that's where people live.
Mm-hmm. And there's retaliation against some of their kids, and then teachers are publishing emails. And it's just, it's so ugly, and I've heard it all from every single district.
So how do you think it stops if you're unwilling to stop it or weigh in on it in your neighborhood, in your town, in your school district? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Paul in Glenview.
Hello.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Paul, you're on.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Good.
So I'm. My name is Paul Kelly. I'm running for the District 225 School Board. I'm part of a team. We're Team Glenbrook 225. There are four seats open, and we got together, and we're very excited about the campaign. I think one of the open questions is probably, why did I run? Why are we running? And again, one of the biggest frustrations that I found, I've lived in Glenview for 16 years. I have a son who's a freshman at Glenbrook South. I have two younger kids, obviously, going up through the high school. When the plan was unveiled in the summer, everyone was anticipating a comprehensive plan, which it was, but it very much failed in terms of the execution components. Specifically, they stated that when you move from one phase to the other, which starting in e-learning, it would be based on certain metrics and indicators. Well, those metrics and indicators were never identified in the beginning. And many of us were asking those questions from the beginning, and they never, for 3 or 4 months, still kept kicking the can down the road.
Yep.
And it just got to the point of just unbelievable frustration. That was probably one of the key aspects from my standpoint. And I said, we've got to do something. We've got to get these kids back into school. And another thing that's just a great testament to these teachers and in-person learning, and I just think a lot of these administrators, they undervalued what the in-person learning really does for kids. My son got back into in-person learning in January to a certain degree. And he was saying, Dad, I've learned more in like 2.5 weeks than I have in the past 2.5 months.
Yep.
You know, and there's so many different components of it. So we're very excited. We're very optimistic.
So Paul Kelly is your name, and then your running mates?
My running mates are Carol Schmidt, Bo Herbst, and Mylin Nofke.
All right. Glenview District.
Good luck, and thanks for doing something, you know.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Dads are doing something. I love it.
No, it's good, and it's one of those things, too. I mean, you listen to a guy like that, and he's obviously an intelligent guy. He's the off guy. I mean, you've got a lot of successful professionals in that school district, and they've allowed that school district to become what it's become, and they've mm-hmm. allowed that school board to do what it did to their schools and their kids, by extension, over the last year. It's just remarkable.
But that stops today, we hope.
Well, at least you have candidates stepping up to put in the fight. Appreciate that.
Paul Kelly.
Michelle in St. Charles.
Hi.
Hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi. I'm calling from St. Charles. I was on your show a couple months ago. I just wanted to give you guys an update on our school board recall. First, before I talk about that, I just want to say everyone should get out and vote. Parents need to get out and vote in this election. This is very important. They need to vote and then stay involved and bring in candidates so that those boards stay strong and stand for the children and for our tax dollars. So that's what I want to say first. But in St. Charles, we find ourselves in a tough situation. We filed our recall petition. We ended up getting just over 12% of signatures, about 299 signatures. It was a short effort. It was about over a month. So we filed it with the Kane County Courthouse, Kane County Board of Elections. And we filed the recall petition with the signatures and the evidence to show why we need a recall and a special election of the 5 board members that we have on our board. And we know that there is no official ordinance in St. Charles or for the state outside of the governor, but we will be taking our recall ordinance or present a proposal for a recall ordinance on May 3rd to the St. Charles City Council mayor. So we are hoping that two city councilmen or women support our recall ordinance and at least will hear it and consider it. I think that elections are important, but when you come late into it, and some communities will be able to flip their board, and I'll be so excited to see that tonight. But some communities like St. Charles might not be able to flip their board completely, and that will be. And so we need something else. We need a different mechanism for the public to be able to hold their officials accountable to their decisions.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Michelle. Appreciate it. Good luck out St. Charles Way. Yeah, you know, there's no substitute for winning elections, ultimately. You know, and you're right. Some people are going to come to it more quickly than others. You have to put together candidates and campaigns, and you have to win elections, ultimately. I mean, the clawback mechanisms like recall, that's all well and good. I'm fine with that. But you got to have quality people step up, because ultimately somebody has to fill those offices and somebody has to provide the leadership within those institutions. So who's it going to be? Nick in Plainfield.
Hey.
Hey, Nick.
How's it going? Hey, Amy, I saw you at the cross-district rally a few weeks back.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So tell us why you're running and what changes you want there and Plainfield.
So I'm a mental health professional and have worked in the Chicagoland area for several years and have noticed over the years that District 202 is a little bit behind on special ed and mental health support services. We actually have great people in those places, but the overall sort of system in which they function is kind of messed up. And then when COVID hit, it just really just exposed the whole thing. And going into really 2017, I was really considering this. One of my neighbors had been school board president for years, and I was talking to him about it here and there. And then when this all happened, I said, okay, what does it really entail? How much time am I looking at? Kind of got a rundown about what goes into the school board and what they, in a normal year, would typically do. And then kind of compared that to where we were now and just said, you know, this is going to be a thing. The mental health thing that the COVID response has caused is going to be something that's going to last for a while. And I have, that's what we do at our practice, is we work with students and parents, and we work with schools in a lot of cases. And so I said, you know what, this is an area where I can really be helpful. I want to get involved and help do some really good things for 202, help reopen the schools as soon as we can. I was looking at it kind of like, okay, come April, I'm sure they're going to start to try to reopen things. But once that happens, then what? You know, and that's one of the reasons I got involved. I looked at it as a four-year thing. But what COVID did is it sort of exposed, I think, the ugliness, if you will, of how it all works, and made communities sort of see that. And I'm one of those community members with an area that I think I can help, and that's what made me jump in.
And COVID suicides far outweigh COVID deaths.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking at this last night. COVID deaths between ages 10 to 20 in Will County were like three. Mm-hmm. There's like three of them in like the last 2 years. Suicide rate around that time was also seven or eight deaths, which doesn't sound like a lot if you think of it like that. But if you compare it to, if you do it as a percentage, you compare it to years without COVID, it's a 25 to 30% increase. And you're seeing that across several counties. I saw a report in August where the DuPage County coroner was pleading with schools to reopen for something to happen, because the suicide and drug overdose rate was just way higher than it should be. It was 25-30% higher. Yeah. You're seeing that, I think, across the board. And so it's not just simply suicide either. It's also drug use has increased. It's they call it deaths of despair. And we knew that was going to happen. I mean, you couldn't talk to a mental health professional back in April when the lockdowns first started that would say this is going to be good beyond 45 days. You know, we all knew that after about a 45-day period, we're going to start seeing significant increase in deaths from other things. It was just like Trump at the time said, the cure can't be worse than the disease. And yeah, it is.
Yeah, But it's, and of course, it's not just deaths, and it's not just the destructive behavior. It's also the long tail that a lot of mental health professionals we've talked to, COVID is going to have in terms of kids who are anxious, kids who are depressed, behind in learning. That there's all these sorts of lingering effects that are predicted for significant percentages of young people in school because of the isolation, because of the lack of education over the last year plus now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way that people develop is we kind of look at it from a five dimensions perspective, you know, and social is one of those dimensions. And when you lose a year of education, you lose a year of social development, emotional development, and intellectual development. So it's not just, it's not like in a bubble. And so when you take that away, and schools do provide that, that's one of the biggest things they do is provide that social learning environment. If you take that away, it has a profound effect. I even saw one study that saw a correlation between overall life expectancy towards years missed in education. And it was like, I forget what the exact numbers were, but it was like somewhere in the vicinity of like a 7-year drop in life expectancy for every like 1 year of education that you missed. So it just goes to show you how important it is to have that in-person environment and the community involvement in the whole thing, because it affects everything. It's social, it's emotional, it's intellectual. The education impacts kids. You know, you look, and you're going to see that. You're right. It's going to be that long tail mental health thing. The COVID thing is one thing, but when it's all done, the fallout from all of this is still something we're going to have to deal with and clean up. And it was as if nobody considered that at all.
No,
it wasn't
no
even
one on your school board did. And that's why, and I know Rick Todd is running with you, and he's a Will County Sheriff's Deputy who responded to some of these suicides. I won't get into the details, but he saw it firsthand, though, and that made him think, what are we doing to our children? And that made him act, and he's running with you as well as, can you tell us the other members that are on your slate?
Yeah, so it's Rick, and then we got Annie Klepsius, and we got Raj Pillai, and that whole team, the way that formed was amazing. None of us knew each other beforehand. We pulled petitions, a bunch of parents vetted us out, saw that we were a good team, talked to us about what we wanted to run for, supported us, created a campaign around us, and this is not a solo operation. We have about 1,000 or so parents and taxpayers involved in this campaign. It's amazing. And yeah, Rick and I and Raj and Annie all sort of have similar backgrounds with what motivated us to get in. Just seeing the effects of it all kind of pushed us over the edge to say, all right, enough's enough. Let's go do something.
All right. Very good. So Plainfield 202, Nick, Annie, Raj, and Rick. All right. Nick, Annie,
that's right.
Raj, and Rick in District 202.
I think
thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But
please, people, go vote. Please.
We'll take more of your calls. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Candidates or supporters of particular candidates for local offices. And as you hear from these candidates, too, I mean, you hear these are like smart, thoughtful, professional people that are stepping up to try to reverse course, generally speaking, what's happening at the local level. So we should be paying attention and spreading the word on their behalf if you... you know, as I say all the time about Illinois, you might as well put in the fight as long as you're there, even if you're halfway out the door. We'll take more of your calls. Stay tuned for that. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and it's election day in Illinois for local races, school boards, municipalities, townships. And we're taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. We want to hear from candidates for those posts, supporters of candidates for those posts.
Yep.
And get as much of a survey of the region as we can as people are stepping up. And I think a lot of new candidates motivated by the response from both school districts and municipalities to the lockdowns of the last year.
I guess they really had no reasoning for it. I mean, if you look at the other, you know, school districts in this country, they were so brave, they went back to work. And what did they do? Hide in the corner. oh, you know, if it kills one person might lose their life, like shut everything down.
Well, it's not just school districts, remember, too. I mean, for example, the two mayors we've talked about to some extent, Keith Pekow in Orland Park and Steve Morley in Elmhurst, those are two individuals who said to Jelly Belly, no, our village or our city and our business community is going to figure out how we're going to do this locally. We're not going to take your guidance, or we're not going to abide your mandates. I'm not going to use my police force to run around fining or harassing businesses the way that Triple Threat does in Chicago. I'm not going to do that. And so thinking about your local business community and how central that is to the vibrancy of your community, the Orland Park approach, Pekow, the Elmhurst approach, Morley, or the approach that your mayor took. And by the way, this goes not just for those communities, but other communities, at least when restaurants said, hey, we're going to stay open, and, you know, Molon Labe and the village boards, the mayor said, oh, okay, you know, hey, I'm not going to harass right. you. If you want to do that and people feel comfortable coming to your restaurant or your place of business, then so be it. You know, people have to assume it may make calculations about their own risk tolerance and assume said risks. So it's a reminder. How about in the era of defund the police at the local level? Is this an important issue? Because it's not limited to big city America, as we've seen over the last year. That's something else that's also happened in the last year. How does that play in your community? How important is that to you? Security, sort of a cornerstone of a vibrant community, that it's safe, right?
Right. And the polls are
these
open.
Are local
right.
issues.
Local issues. And people, you know, I got so many text messages. Oh, I don't have kids, but I live in District 214. Can I vote? Yes. You can.
Of course.
Go and vote.
Of course.
Well, I'm just responding to some text messages we got. And if you have a list of candidates that you like and you know people that live in that school district, you know, text them. You send them an email of a snapshot of the candidates that they need to vote for.
Because if you don't, your school board could wind up with the sorts of debates you see in places like Portland. Have you seen this?
What? Oh, no.
Portland Public Schools Board of Education delayed adopting a high school's new mascot of an evergreen tree.
An evergreen tree?
Yeah, an evergreen tree was going to be the new mascot, replacing the Trojan. That was controversial.
What?
Okay. Trojan's controversial. So USC is going to be on the chopping block before too long. But Portland, tip of the spear here, pun intended.
What's offensive about an evergreen tree?
The Ida B. Wells Barnett High School in Southwest Portland was going to adopt the evergreen tree. Then the director, I guess that's what they call him, the director of this committee, which includes students, staff, community members that proposed evergreens as the new mascot, Director Michelle DePass, said we could have a blind spot here. Evergreen tree?
What?
Evergreen tree?
I'm not picking like up what you're laying down, Dan.
I feel like I'm playing
what is
$100,000 pyramid. Evergreen tree.
Because it's green? A color?
Tree? Tree? What are trees for? Lynching black people.
Oh, come on.
I'm wondering if there was any concern with the imagery there and using a tree as our mascot. I think everyone comes with blind spots. I think that might be a really big blind spot. One of the committee members, a gentleman named Martin Osborne, who's black, said the new mascot represents tree of life, not a tree of death. We did talk about it, but we were looking at the symbolism. More as a tree of life than a tree of death. You could certainly take it either way, depending on your position. No, actually, Mr. Osborne, I don't think you could take it any other way.
It's an evergreen tree. It reminds people of Christmas. Happy.
And lynchings. Mm-hmm. Lynchings. Osborne said their decision obviously had nothing to do with the history of lynching in the United States. Oh, really? You weren't trying to memorialize, lionize lynching? Thank you. Because that's, of course, what you would assume, because this is the philosophy. And by the way, this is a philosophy. This is just an absurd example. But this is a philosophy that is omnipresent in K-12 education. We are going to take things in the light least favorable to the moving party, no matter how ridiculous it is. we're going to take things in the light least favorable, no matter how unreasonable, if it runs afoul of our anti-racist identitarian philosophy. Osborne added, lynching trees typically are not evergreens. Now they're getting into a conversation about which trees were typically used to. This is how insane. This is how insane.
I mean,
this is.
Wasting,
this is
they have nothing better to do with their time.
And then
a lot
the
of
director,
volunteer projects they can work on. Yes,
the director and the black gentleman I just mentioned, Osborne. The director says to him, lynching is a really difficult topic to talk about, and as a sole black board member, I invite you, beg you, implore you to join me in disrupting the situations, practices that are racist. I can't do this by myself. Uh-huh. The principal there told the school board. School board has oversight over the principal. We take this seriously. I definitely want to follow that commitment to protect, preserve, and promote the legacy of Ida B. Wells. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is what's happening in K-12 education. And, yes, this is an extreme example, but given the hysteria over nicknames and monuments and other symbols of Western civilization, is it so beyond the realm of consideration to think that this sort of silliness could be visited at your local school district if it's not already? All right, take a few more calls. Edward in Palos Park.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Yes. My name is Edward Gale. I'm running for school board out here in the south suburbs, Palos 118. And I got involved with the start of the new year with schools closed, and I couldn't take it anymore. So I was like the only parent that showed up in person, and I caused a little bit of a stink because I called everybody out for the truth of what's going on. The school was being crippled artificially to keep it closed, and I wasn't about to stand for it. And then a lot of the local people encouraged me to take my views and run for the board. I'm running on a slate called Kids First, and that was always my intention and will always be my intention if I'm lucky enough to win today's election.
All right, Edward, tell us your last name again.
G-A-L. Gal.
Edward Gale.
Edward Gale, okay.
And the Kids First Slate in Palos Park 118. All right. Thanks for the call, Edward. Good luck today.
Yeah. Working
Mike
man.
Mike in Union.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I'd like to commend all the people, all the parents stepping up to run for these school boards. But I'm saddened by the fact that once these kids return back to school, I think the parents are just going to forget all about what's actually going on in the classrooms. There still needs to be parental responsibility. I would beg everybody to get their kids out of these politically run schools and use all these deals that these privatized schools are using. That's a sad fact. The schools are going to reopen. Everybody's going to go cheering and yay, finally. And then they're going to be right back at the hands of the same people that are making, just foolishness out of trees for mascots and all these other things. So don't let the fight end after the election. It's my advice to everybody. Keep going. So,
absolutely.
Thanks for what you're bringing up.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, I mean, that's sound advice. You win, and then the fight really begins.
Right.
Because now you're inside the institution with all the institutionalists who don't want you there. I hope people are...
That's why people ran as, slate
eyes wide
candidates.
Open about it.
Yep.
Yes. Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Hi. All you fellow Western Springers out there, in District 101... If you listen up, I'm 100% positive in this group. Caitlin Sunday Diego, Brett Letere, Dan Pansing, Ted McCabe. For D204, which is our high school LT, Jill Gresh, Dawn Aubert, Tim Alborez, Michael Thomas. This is a sad thing right now, guys. These seniors, Amy, we talk about we want them back in school. They're missing their prom and their graduation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but listen how sad this is now. Now these seniors are, because it's gone on so long, they're sad. They lay in bed all day. Mm-hmm. They don't even want to go to school anymore. They're done. They're like, I'd rather lay in bed all day and do nothing because I can't do anything I want to do. And, they don't even want, they tell their parents, we don't care, we don't want to be back in school. But listen, parents, the rest of us, any of you, I don't even have any kids in these districts anymore, but if you're going to walk around and complain and talk about how sad and what a terrible situation this is, please get out and vote. I'll text this. I'll send it to anybody who wants it. Anybody out there who knows me, get in touch with me, and I'll send you these recommendations. I'd be happy to do that.
Thanks for the call, Mary Kay. Yeah, I mean, that's right. The point about, you know, it's complain and you have people step up. Maybe you're not one of the people who can step up, but you can at least support those who are. I mean, it's the minimal thing you can do. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. I'm out here in District 214. I'm supporting Elizabeth Bauer, Jackie Ryan, Rich Menenga, and Tony Roselli, all great people, all parents of students in the district, as opposed to the establishment hacks who, from what I understand, don't have any kids in the district, may have before. Some of them have been there since 2007. Out here in 214, they've been running as a slate. You know, Dan, I have a question for you, since you're more of a political guy than I am, even. Is it a requirement for local government officials to all endorse each other? I mean, because our mayor out here has endorsed these guys who have, he parades around as a conservative, and these people on this board, there's nothing conservative about them at all. They don't have a conservative bone in their body.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, this is just ridiculous. But anyway, we got four great people who will look out for the kids.
Yeah, but I just tweeted it out, too, that slate that you're talking about. District 214, Bauer, Meninga, Roselli, and Ryan.
Yep, great people. We should have them running the board. We need to put a check on this board that we have out here that has done nothing and votes on a lot of things in their little committee of the whole meetings, makes all their decisions there, and then doesn't have any debate for the public.
Yeah, it's awful. It's
and
a
that's
communist
country. And Franklin Arlington Heights is a teacher, so that's a teacher's perspective as well, which is important. Yeah, it is interesting though that he brings up local officials. Is it a requirement they endorse one another? You know, this is the point, and this is why, you know, people are a little leery of getting involved, because it's a click. It becomes a click. This is, you know, we talk about the political ruling class at the federal level. Well, the dynamic can operate at the local level too. And so you have to, you know, break up the Tea Party, or bring a Tea Party to break up the Garden Party, one of the two.
There you go.
Annie's good. Annie in 202.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, good having you. Because I met you at that rally too in Naperville. You did a wonderful job.
All Amy's rally friends.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'm taking everyone's cell phone number down. I'm like, what's your name? What's your number?
Right. So, yeah. So I'm out here in Plainfield, District 202. I'm running as a candidate as part of the 202 Parents for Choice slate. I'm with Nick Genazzi, whom we heard from earlier, and Raj Pillai, who's talked to you guys, I think, one other time before, and Rick Todd, too. And, you know, we're just trying to do better. The reason why I'm running, one of the reasons why I chose to run for school board was, like St. Charles, we decided to run a recall petition on a couple of our school board members. And when we filed it, we were each person that signed the affidavit, the file 2 and 10, was sent a letter from the school board president saying, you realize that this holds no weight. And also, going on, you know, for future reference, any communication needs to come directly through me. So now you're telling us that parents and taxpayers in the community cannot go directly to the school board members and ask them questions. I get there's, you know, there are certain things that they can't divulge, but you're basically making it look like now you're the head and everything needs to come through you. That is not a school board working collaboratively with its community.
No. Yeah. All right,
and
Amy.
That's just, it's not okay anymore. So we decided to run and, you know, we're going to make positive change. We're going to make our district fifth best district in the state. And we're going to get our teachers paid better. We're going to focus on student achievement. We're going to focus on transparency and communication. And we're going to foster an environment in our community that focuses on personal achievement and lifelong learning.
All right.
So
thanks for the call, yeah. Amy. Good luck today. Good luck to you and your slate. Terry in Rogers Park.
Yeah, I think you can solve a lot of problems by putting public cameras or audio in classrooms.
I feel like I'm
living that.
Well, with Zoom, right. you sort of had it.
We are.
Right, you know, for all those Jeffrey Toobins in the education business. Yeah, it's sort of funny. Think, how about that? How about body cams on teachers? How about body cams on, I have always wanted this, on, you know, legislators, governors, local officials. I mean, now, in this state, you know, all you'd really see mostly is like the bottom half of a lunch counter if you put body cams on most of these people. But, but yeah, I always love the idea. You know, you like cameras so much. Mm-hmm. How about we turn them on you and watch you during your work hours?
Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. It's fun to revisit that. All right. Appreciate everybody who called in. Again, polls are open till 7 p.m. tonight, so get out. And we'll probably talk about this a little bit more at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour with Ted Dabrowski from Wire Points as well, these local races. So continue to give us a call if you want. We'll get as many people as we can in to profile their races and their communities, but make sure to spread the word on the candidates to vote for and to tell your friends and neighbors to get your butts out, their butts out and vote. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy and St. Fauci saying in an interview released yesterday, federal government won't be in the business of mandating vaccine passports for travel and businesses. I doubt the federal government will be the main mover of a vaccine passport concept, Fauci told Politico. The federal government may be involved in making sure things are done fairly and equitably, but I doubt if the federal government is going to be the leading element of that. Oh, I see. So the federal government is the cooler and C-suite America are the bouncers, to put this in you know, Patrick Swayze roadhouse metaphor there to make it real. That isn't that interesting? Isn't that such a perfect setup, consistent with what we see happening when we're talking about Major League Baseball, the NBA, these sports leagues that get most of the attention until corporate America weighs in, as they have with moving the All-Star game from Atlanta, of course,
to Denver.
But you understand, corporate America, rent-seeking corporate America, woke corporate America, front, and then, you know, they just need the federal government there as the hammer, as required. That turns out to be a big problem in terms of trajectory. Just sticking on this vaccine passport issue, really good piece at the American Institute for Economic Research by Jordan Schachtel about the Excelsior that just rolled off the showroom floor in New York.
Yeah.
He said wouldn't be surprised to see it scrapped altogether by the end of the year. It's just he's massive security flaws, shrinking customer base by design, remains incredibly impractical and incredibly easy to manipulate. In short, Excelsior Pass sucks thanks to the idiocracy that was responsible for its design and implementation. And he gives this great example. Say you want to attend a Knicks game this evening at Madison Square Garden, a partner to the Excelsior Pass program. It's 9 a.m. Your event is at 7:30 p.m. If you don't have the vaccine yet, that means you'll need to obtain a negative COVID-19 test to receive your pass. Want to take that test this morning? Not so fast. The antigen test needs to have been administered within the last 6 hours, so you better plan your entire day around navigating that short window between your COVID test and the event this evening. Just receive your second dose and you're ready to hit the town? Not so fast. You must wait at least 2 weeks before your green checkmark appears on your vaccine passport. Has it been more than 90 days since your last dose? Rejected. You only have a 76-day window, more than 14 days, under 19 days, to acquire a Vax Pass, which has to be renewed every 30 days.
Every 30 days? What?
received a vaccine or COVID test from out of state, took a private at-home test kit or a test from a provider that is not registered in the New York State Central Database. you're out of luck.
Yep.
You will not be able to receive your Excelsior because your information never made it into the system. Are you an out-of-state resident looking to attend an event or enter an Excelsior Pass participating store? Out of luck. The New York system does not communicate with other databases and other state plan and other states plan on rewarding vaccine passport contracts to other companies. And it just goes on from there. He goes into
silliness.
the junkie application and so on and so forth. For more on this marriage between C-Suite America and our federal betters, we're pleased to be joined again by Roger Kimball, who, of course, is the editor of the New Criterion. Roger, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Great. Great to be with you guys on this beautiful spring morning.
What about St. Fauci? We're not going to do the dirty work. Corporate America will do the dirty work, and we'll be there to back their play.
Yes. I mean, this is, as I am fond of saying, this whole episode of revolving around the what I still think of as the Wuhan flu, our latest Chinese import, will deserve to be memorialized in an addendum to Charles McKay's great book, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds.
Yeah.
This is the first time in history we have quarantined a healthy population for a disease that presents a serious threat to a tiny, tiny sliver of the population. But what we have just seen is two things. One is the alacrity with which the aspiring Gauleiters of our population are willing to use the coercive power of the state to tell their citizens what they may do, what they may not do, who they may see, whether they can leave their houses. It's extraordinary. That's on one side. On the other side, it's revealed the very disturbing ovine tendencies of the American population, how sheep-like people are willing to be. They just rolled over and said, fine, we'll stay home. We won't go out. We won't go to restaurants. We'll watch as the governor of New York State destroys the economic infrastructure of the state and, enacts policies which are responsible for the deaths of thousands of people.
On the vaccine passport piece of it, though, it's really interesting what's happening. You've had DeSantis and Abbott both essentially prohibit vaccine passports. You've got the Kansas City Star calling for a vaccine passport, that editorial board calling for a vaccine passport in Missouri to get back to normal, quote unquote. I mean, are we really going to have this situation, even perhaps more so and more long lasting than with the lockdowns, of effectively free states and COVID obsessed states?
Well, I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that. But your litany of possible restrictions that you opened the show with is both frightening but not surprising. You know, they will do whatever they can do until there's serious pushback. I hope that if I may so put it, the manly strategy of someone like Ron DeSantis will prevail. But who knows whether it will prevail? I mean, we just don't know. How supine is the American public? Well, that is a question we don't know the answer to.
Well, what about mass mandatory vaccinations if you want to go back to Rutgers in the fall or Cornell University?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think every college is going to fall in line now and say that in order to come back you have to be vaccinated?
Not every college, but some will, probably. Some will. And as a society, you know, we're at a crossroads in this country. There are question marks that we don't know the answer to. To what extent are we going to allow ourselves to be the pawns of an overreaching government? We don't know the answer to that. I have to say that some of the signs are not too encouraging. But, I don't think that the policies have yet been formulated. We are right now in the process of doing that to the extent that Saint Anthony Fauci, as you referred to him, prevails, you know, we will become a medicalized society under the thumb of a coercive administrative state that, you know, who it doesn't matter whether it's a government in Washington or your state capital that's promulgating these sorts of restrictions, or whether it's, as you say, you know, the corporate America, which more and more has become captive of the woke ideology of the left. I mean, why is Coca-Cola giving us lectures and sermons about ways to be less white? Why is Delta Airlines getting into the business of commenting on what is essentially an innocuous voter legislation in Georgia? Why is American Airlines doing the same thing in Texas?
Well,
this is a very odd moment.
That's the operative question, and particularly when you see, for example, the Morning Consult survey on the Georgia election law. 42% of those Americans surveyed support the law, 36% oppose, as David Harsanyi pointed out, National Review. And imagine what the numbers would be if the law wasn't being lied about 24/7. But it's still so 36% of people who have been whipsawed by propaganda for the past month about the Georgia election reform law. 36% is enough to go all in for Delta and Coca-Cola and Merck. And what is that? What's the play there? What does that say? What is it, the Major League Baseball, for that matter? What does that say about what they think their future is and who their future is?
Well, I mean, I have to think that one part of the calculation is that this is going to be beneficial to their bottom line. They must think, well, you know, we're looking to the youth of America. The youth of America is captive of this malevolent woke ideology. Therefore, we will cater to it. That's one element. But I think another element is that these people themselves have become captive of this ideology. You know, they in the 60s and 70s, when, you know, we had riots and demonstrations, and this is the first great wave of the Cultural Revolution in America, by and large, you could count on corporate America to stand, mention National Review, to stand athwart history, as William Buckley put it, and say, no, stop. But you can't really count on that. You can't really count on that anymore because, you know, I mean, when Major League Baseball becomes, you know, part of this coven of wokeness, you sort of think it's kind of all over. And, you know, it's partly cynical. You know, the basketball league, you know, they see the big future for their, you know, their game in China. Therefore, a coach criticizes something in China and he gets fired. I mean, amazing that we should be so kowtowing to the Chinese in our sports games. So there you have it. It's a very odd moment. And as I say, I don't think we don't know the last chapters of this novel, but right now we're in a dramatic situation.
Yeah. And I think that the China piece too, I mean, this is that all of this for Major League Baseball over the last several days, concurrent with them signing a streaming deal with Tencent, big Chinese media company, that Daryl Morey, the former GM of Houston Rockets, ran afoul of in supporting Hong Kong, and the NBA got its streaming deal nixed by Tencent, and so now Major League Baseball is in bed with them. So, I mean, there is something to that, right? I don't think it's the whole story, but it is definitely part of the story about where these corporations, and including American sports, professional sports leagues, see their future. And maybe it's not so much America.
Yes, we're living in an odd moment.
And these are global citizens, of course.
Yeah. I mean, that great oxymoron, of course, a citizen is someone who's, you know, whose allegiance is to a kiwis, a city. But we don't. That's not the way it works for these progressive ideologues who want us all to emancipate ourselves from the parochialism of allegiance to to America and sign up for the progressive utopia of a Marxist vision.
Yeah, there'll be a pass to that.
It would be too bad if that happened.
Maybe there'll be a pass to that Marxist utopia. Roger Kimball, editor of New Criterion, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when. You're moving out.
That music means it's time for our weekly hit with Ted Dabrowski, the president of WirePoints, Inc., WirePoints.org, for all things policy-related in Chicago and Illinois. Ted, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy, and happy Election Day.
Yes.
Don't forget to vote.
Consistent with our theme music, though, we'll get to the election in a second. And I don't know that we've mentioned this before, but you know, you're not just some guy with, a useless BA who writes policy papers like me. You were a practitioner in banking and finance, so you've lived in the real world. And so the reason I set that up is to say, you know, the buzz around Chicago now is, boy, the suburbs are hot. That housing market is hot. I think, and the implication is that some sort of recovery is going on. My property taxes were lowered for the first time. I had a buddy tell me yesterday who lives out, who's got a home out River Forest Way. But of course he recognizes it's for all the wrong reasons that they were lowered. Your view on the hot suburban housing market right now that everybody's talking about.
Well, you know, I was surprised by it at first, too. When the COVID started, I was thinking, holy cow, you know, our home values here. If you look at before COVID, Illinois, Chicago, we've so underperformed the rest of the country that it's an embarrassment, really, because you're seeing people's nest eggs grow a lot in other states. This is where people have most of their money. And in Illinois, our nest eggs have been shrinking, certainly with inflation and the property taxes we pay. It's down. And so, you know, we can get excited by the uptick, and a lot of it has to do with people just fleeing Chicago, right? It has nothing to do with a huge demand for Illinois. And it's a false sense of security that our values are up. For many people, it's going to be like, well, I'm going to take advantage of it and get out. And I hear a lot of people doing that. But it is a short-term phenomenon where I think it's just people fleeing Chicago. They've got, you know, one or two kids, and they said, well, you know, they're not going to stay there anymore, and they still want to work here. And they come up to our neighborhoods, and it's been good for that.
But, well, a lot of people,
it's not a real solution.
I mean, most of the people on my street, I've had seven families move, and the ones that are still remaining in Illinois are moving out of the city because of selective enrollment, because of the high school situation. Like, you know, their kids are getting, you know, seventh, eighth grade, and they don't want to go through that process because it's harder to get into a selective enrollment high school than it is to get into Harvard or Yale or an Ivy League school. So that's why they're moving.
Yeah, we have to see how this all plays out for Chicago, but it's helping the suburbs. But it's Chicago's 2.7 million, or it used to be. What is it going to look like when this is all said and done? And what's the offset versus a slight increase in prices in the suburbs?
Well, that's it. So my sense of it, and you tell me if you agree or not, is that there's a little bit of a sugar high right now with all the money sloshing around, and finally the weather is getting better, and things are slowly reopening, so it's like feels like a recovery, and there's some irrational exuberance, and that will cool off into, you know, something akin to sub-zero temperatures in the winter here. You know, maybe by the end of next year, the beginning of end of this year, beginning of next year. And what I see is free fall. I mean, you know, no particular bottom. I mean, into the abyss is where this is ultimately going once the funny money and the irrational exuberance wears off.
Well, yeah, because, you know, we're going to see so much money come in from the, of course, first you have the CARES Act, you had all the different stimulus bills we've had. We have the one that we just finished. Now we have the infrastructure we're talking about, $2.3 trillion. Let's see if it passes in this form. But you're talking about billions of money that we're printing, right? We're printing again. This is all funny money again. It's not like it's really generated money. We're going to have to pay for it in some way later. And you're right, for Illinois, we're hitting a new equilibrium as people move out of Chicago, move to the suburbs. But you know, my fear is what's happening with the out-migration numbers. We've seen them continue to increase every year. I don't know how COVID will play into that, but my fear is that we're going to see a massive increase in out-migration again, with all the things that have gone on, from school closings to the COVID policy to the lack of reopenings and all that, and of course, fear of Chicago going forward.
That out-migration, it's important to dig into the numbers as you do a bit. That out-migration, there's a huge spread, and in fact, at least up until recently, it was the largest in the nation, between the household incomes moving out versus the household incomes moving in. Illinois has the largest negative spread in the country, meaning, you know, richer people are moving out and poorer people are moving in. That's nothing to say anything bad about people with lower incomes, but you're losing a lot of productive capacity. You're losing a lot of wealth generators.
Well, yeah, you know, it's a double impact. First of all, we lose on net, you know, over 100,000 people on net to out migration. So we're losing lots of people, period. And then on top of that, the net exchange between the people who come in and come out are $15,000 to $20,000. You know, they make $15,000 to $20,000 less, and so, you know, the tax base is being destroyed, and the earning capacity is being destroyed, and the innovators are leaving. And it's if you look at every single, this is important, if you look at every single age bracket and every single income bracket, the key brackets, we are losers on all of them. We're net losers on all of them. We don't even win anything. We don't even win on any bracket. So that's what's scary about Illinois.
Well, and I wanted to, yesterday Governor Pritzker signed a bill increasing pensions for firefighters, and Mayor Lightfoot said not so fast, and that we, the taxpayers, are going to have to pay for that in the form of an increase in property taxes. How do you think that this is going to end?
Oh, it's. I mean, look at everything they're doing. It's the continuation of the pendulum into the craziness. Right, we've got a city that can't function, and yet they just increased the pensions for firefighters. Not huge numbers, but they impact us. Another property tax increase on Chicagoans. They just increased the bargaining power. Pritzker just signed it into law for the Chicago Teachers Union, as if they need more power, right? They've struck so many times in recent years. They don't need more power. And again, every time what you're doing is you're diminishing the power of the little guy and increasing the power of the public sector. And that's exactly why Chicago's in such deep trouble. So it's a continuation of bad policy.
Well, and the other thing that this funny money does that's underwriting this largesse from the largest governor in the country is it really blunts the impact of the Janus decision from the Supreme Court a couple years ago to eliminate fair share. It just makes it more attractive to go along, to get along, rather than stand up to the public sector unions. It also makes them more dominant. So that, again, in turn, has a multiplier effect in terms of making it more attractive just to go along, get along, rather than say, I'm going to keep that money that you're using to support candidates that I don't support.
Yeah, it's so much money, and it's going to really mess up our view of Illinois and its mess, because, you know, Illinois is reaching that interesting point, right, almost a junk the out-migration and all that. And so people were starting to be able to see across the country that Illinois was an outlier. But with billions and billions of dollars flowing through the country, and well, trillions, it's going to hide Illinois' problems for a couple years. And, you know, the funny stuff will continue to go on. And, you know, we'll be rotting. I hate to use that term, but we'll be rotting more, even though the money's flowing in a big way. And then, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years from now, we're going to wake up and say, uh-oh, you know, the funny money's gone, and what have we got left? And it's going to be a big hole.
With today being Election Day, as you mentioned, as we've been talking about most of the morning, local races and or issues that you want to highlight for any particular reason?
Well, you know, I'm excited by you know, hearing. We'll see what the reality is, but I'm excited by how many people have spoken up in the last, you know, few months. And, you know, Amy's seen it a lot by being out there on the school campuses. But it's exciting to see. And I think, you know, people forget, you know, I remember 15 years ago before I got into the local stuff, I had no idea about local politics, local policy. For me, everything was federal. And the reality is, you know, our 2/3 of our property tax bills are generated because of costs locally. You know, for example, like school districts, 2/3 come from school districts. So knowing what's happening there matters. And we're talking about the power of the unions just now. You know, this is where I think it really shows itself up. The unions, you know, and anybody who's working in government, they, you know, they get long-term contracts, 5-year contracts, sometimes 10-year contracts with guaranteed raises, guaranteed benefits. Nobody in the private sector gets that. Nobody. And so that's what's happening. If you're not engaged in what's happening in your school board or your park district board or whatever, that's what's happening to you, and you're paying the price for it. You may not even know it. They increase taxes automatically each year, whether the community can afford it or not. They can add billions in debt, or, you know, millions in your environment, your local environment. They can change the curriculum, politicize a classroom. It just goes on and on. And so it really behooves people to get engaged. And you know, I'm excited by what I hear all the people calling in today. It's you know, we need much more of it, of course, and it's got to last. But that's what needs to happen.
This is a headline, of course, that's national in scope, but it has local application. The International Monetary Fund estimates the COVID-19 pandemic recession could have been 3 times as bad if not for government support. So government shut down, then government turns on the printing press, and government is the savior. And we see that happen at the local level all the time, and we just have such a difficult time on the small government, free minds, free market side. Such a difficult time, I guess, helping people connect those dots. It doesn't seem like it's that complicated, but creating problems and then misapplying the wrong remedies, to borrow from my favorite Groucho Marxism, that one Marxism I do support, we just have a difficult time explaining that to people, that ultimately, as you're sort of talking about before, the piper is going to get paid.
Yeah, it's really hard because, you know, as one of your people on earlier was talking about, we've become like sheep. We just listen to what they say, and what they say is right, and too many of us don't challenge it. Now, I do want to say that I like how many people are speaking up, so maybe the challenge to the they is picking up, but that's been a real problem, right? It's easier for people just to accept it and, you know, take the money. I find it fascinating. I meet people who've gotten their stimulus checks, and they're so excited to spend it, you know, not realizing that they're going to have to pay it back at some point. You know, it would be smarter to put it in the bank and try to, you know, have enough money later when you got to pay those taxes. But that's a part of the problem. We have to keep pushing the fact that, you know, lockdowns actually made things worse. And, you know, we've been fighting hard to make that argument that livelihoods have been destroyed, you know, jobs have been destroyed, and not to mention, you know, the physical problems that people have had through lockdowns.
Yeah, but there's already talk of more lockdowns pending because the numbers in Cook County are rising. Even though the deaths are down and hospitalizations are fine and ICU capacity is more than acceptable, this has become about cases again. And they're talking about restrictions at restaurants and at gyms just in the suburban Cook County.
Well, that's the challenge for us that want to, you know, what I say, speak the truth or talk about the facts. You know, yes, cases are up from their lows of a few weeks ago, but they're also still down 75% from their highs a couple of months ago. So, you know, that's the fact. You know, of course, we have to be vigilant to make sure nothing crazy is going on, but you're right. You know, deaths are way down. Cases are way down. Hospitalizations are way down. They might be up in the short term, but you know, with the amount of vaccinations that have gone on, we can't let them win that argument again and shut us down again. It's going to be, we'll have to speak strongly about it.
Yeah, we're going to say no.
When do the Democrat Socialists roll out the vaccine passport here?
We don't need passports. Is all I got to say.
Well,
we don't need passports.
Oh,
Aren't you surprised you haven't heard anything on this from Jelly Belly or Welch or Harmon?
Well, I am surprised because that fits in right in the narrative. Although you will recall, they really wanted to do this through contact tracing, and you know, thank God that failed. You're talking about, you know, an army of people running around. It's we don't need that. And I think, you know, from my life experience, one of the worst things we could have is a, you know, vaccination protocol or, you know, vaccination IDs or whatever you want to call them, because it will be just a deeper intrusion into you know, normal livelihood.
And those contact tracers, if you guys haven't dealt with them, I dealt with a 22-year-old who was saying, you know, and they call your children. They're calling minors, and that is wrong. So parents, stick up for your kids and let them know that is not acceptable, that a government agent cannot be calling your minor child and asking them questions.
Yeah, I think a lot will have to do with how many people get on these new boards, government boards, local boards. You know, we have to fight back. You know, I think what's fascinating, let me just tell this story. At New Trier, where my kids go, they created a reopening advisory board of 21 people to advise the superintendent. Wow. and to make recommendations of reopening to the board. Well, out of 21 members on the staff, only two were parents. And this is what happens when you don't have good board members, right? That's allowed to happen. And, you know, the administrators run the show, and this is why you stay shut down. So new board members can fight back on those things, whether it's vaccination policy or you know, reopening.
That is not the New Trier that Charlton Heston attended, Ted. I don't know if you've heard. Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints, Inc., wirepoints.org. Ted, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We've talked about reparations. Evanston, first in the nation. Oakland has followed suit. You can be sure more communities will. We also know that that this is permeating all disciplines. For example, medicine. Two East Coast doctors writing in a Boston Review for a reparations plan in medicine. Our treatment plan follows from this diagnosis. Federally paid reparations are essential, and a broad adoption of healing arcs can build on them. Acknowledgement, redress, and closure. Acknowledgement, redress, and closure. Arc. Closure. Interesting. Federally paid reparations are essential, and a broad adoption of healing arcs can build on them, directly implementing restitution across a variety of institutional contexts and for a range of marginalized BIPOC communities. Again, BIPOC, for those of you who are not updated on your Orwellian acronyms, Black, Indigenous, Persons of Color.
That's part of Words for Profit, right? Words with
No, not mine. No, I'm not taking credit for that. Part of that includes things like preferential care. Do we want to get into that business? Preferential care is one preferential care based on race or ethnicity. They acknowledge it may elicit challenges from our system of colorblind law, but given the ample current evidence that our health, traditional, and other systems already unfairly preference people who are white, we believe that our approach is corrective and therefore mandated. So $25,000 housing grant in Evanston, $500 a month for some selected group of Black Americans in Oakland, healing arcs and support for federal reparations of some number from the medical community. Robert Johnson, the founder of BET, you know, we've talked to him on this show. He has his own reparations plan. What was the number? Something akin, like $40,000, something
right,
like that.
Per household.
So
maybe when Kamala Harris comes to Chicago today, she could stop by Evanston.
To write a check?
Yeah. Well, she's
given her
family's
history.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, reparation age, right?
She's coming in a few hours.
Well, so here's the, ARC, that's an interesting acronym. Acknowledge, redress, and closure. Is there any possibility of getting closure? Or is that acronym oxymoronic? Once you start paying out, where is the end? Where is the end with the arguments that Ta-Nehisi Coates and others have made, but he gets most of the credit, or I would say blame, because it's mostly sophistry. But nonetheless, the argument that's been adopted from his essay from 7 years ago in The Atlantic is everything America essentially was built on the original sin of slavery and the inhibition of wealth creation among black slaves because of that pernicious institution, combined with discrimination, which Coates actually focuses more on than he does slavery. Discriminatory laws and practices in the 20th century has irreparably harmed, really irreparably harmed is what he argues, so I don't know how you repair something that's irreparable, irreparably harmed black Americans' economic fortunes, so that reparations are demanded, as whites have benefited even indirectly from those pernicious practices and the theft of black labor, whether in slave form or through discrimination protecting whites against blacks in the labor market or the housing market, for example. That's the argument. So tell me, if that's the premise from which you start, where and at what dollar closure comes? Well, that's a question we should put to our next guest. He's an old friend. He got some screen time in that City Surreal docuseries we talked about on the show on Hulu. He is our friend, Reverend Greg Livingston, Gregory Seal Livingston. He's the president of the Leaders Network in New York City, and he was a guy who led shutdowns of expressways after the Laquan McDonald shooting, and now he's leading a shutdown of Third Avenue in New York City because he wants to fold in some of the other Western nations, not just the United States, that were also culpable in the slave trade. Reverend Greg, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
The great Dan Proft. And the mighty Amy Jacob.
Great and mighty. All right, he's buttering us up.
Okay.
He's buttering us up for the kill. Yeah, I know what he's doing.
I'm buttering you up. I'm just protecting myself, man.
All right, so before I force you to address the point I just made, give us what you're doing in New York City. What's Chicago and doing in New York City?
Sure. I moved here in 2019 to pastor a church. It was an opportunity that opened up to me. And, of course, as soon as I got here and got kind of settled, the pandemic hit, so everything changed, right? But something that I was doing earlier, the first part of this year, we did a thing called Saving the Soul of America at the Inauguration Eve, about, just trying to bring healing to the country and the like. So for Black History Month, I had gone to the African National Burial Ground here in New York City. I had never been there before, Dan and Amy. And when I got there, I was really it blew me away, because being a Midwestern guy, Chicago guy, the East Coast and the whole slavery argument is very different because of, the 13 colonies and everything. And so New York was colonized by the Dutch, it was formerly New Amsterdam. And New York, I didn't know, owned more slaves than any other northern state. And New York had their number one commodity was not like cotton, tobacco, or sugar. It was black-skinned African slaves. So when I began to look at this, I was like, wow. And so then I started, doing some study in terms of the Netherlands, the Dutch, and all that. And the way I look at it, it's kind of different, I think at least, than the way a lot of people are approaching the reparations argument. It's not just about America. Brazil got 10 times the number of Africans that America did, but these are the Americas. We're looking at Portugal, Spain, France, Denmark, Britain, and of course the Netherlands is where we want to start. One of the things we're planning is to do Juneteenth Amsterdam 2021, because they're still struggling with stuff down there in Holland with Black Pete, you know, the little black elf and Germanic tradition that travels with Santa Claus, you know, with Sinterklaas. And so when Santa Claus gives the good kids gifts, but when the kids are bad, the little black elf, he slides down the chimney and he whips their tails, right? And so, you know, I've been talking to some of these Dutch activists also, and there, and they were like, well, they said, yeah, because the Dutch put on blackface to celebrate this every year, and Afro wigs and big red painted lips, you know, these caricatures, as it were. And they said, well, the reason we wear blackface is because of the soot from the chimney. And they said, but what about the nappy hair and the big red lips? But all I'm saying, to even mention that, is that this whole issue in terms of struggle, in terms of how we envision one another, but I see it as a multinational piece. It is global leverage. You know, Bloomberg Business said that in 1860, the value of slaves in America, estimated now, would be $42 trillion, more than the combined value of all the railroads, factories, and banks. And so, and just to shut up and let you get at me, you know, so to speak. And I, Dan, you know I love you, man. You're the best, man.
I love you too.
I saw the video where you had me come out and say that Ron told me he had big balls, man. That is forever.
Yeah,
that is forever.
That's the best. That is the
best. Yeah, but the thing is, where I'm operating from is that slave owners have received reparations and their descendants, but the descendants of slaves have never have. And for me, it's not emotional. It's not any of that. It's just business. Services were rendered. Pay up.
Well, how are you going to prove that you are a descendant of slaves?
Well, my grandfather was born in 1883. Mm-hmm. His parents were slaves. And so there are plenty of genealogists, and there are various ways of going through plantation records and things of that nature to verify that people were slaves. And also, we know that before a certain point, blacks were not citizens. So if they weren't citizens, what were they? You know?
Yeah, let's assume that it's relatively easy to prove up the lineage. And start with what exactly the form the recompense should take. What if anything, would actually bring closure, right? Arc, acknowledge, redress, and closure. So what is the acknowledgement is that black people were treated inhumanely. Well, sure, that's obvious. Yes, that occurred. The redress is what, and what would it take to get closure on this issue?
I think we need reparations revolution, Dan, because what it would take would be money.
Give me parameters.
Yeah, I'm looking at coming to the Netherlands right now, just starting at a minimum. The Council General we're supposed to meet, you know, and everything, and he's just an employee, but I'm thankful for the meeting. But let's start at $2 trillion, you know, from each of these transatlantic slave trading countries. And what I'm saying is, let's just start that fund. Don't talk to us about distribution, because how are you going to distribute that which you don't even have? Because, see, I have disagreements with the Everson piece and some of these others. You know, we don't need to be negotiating for scraps. This is not a negotiation, you know. A Germany is still, you know, paying reparations to Israel and all these things. But, Dan, and, you know, Civil War, right? Just use America for an example. But for me, it is a multinational piece, not just America, okay? Civil War, 1861 to 1865. Emancipation Proclamation, 1863. But in 1862, if people, as Chicagoans, we have to be we're politically aware that in 1862, that Lincoln signed the District of Columbia Emancipation Act that would give slave owners $300 for each freed slave. He signed the 1862 Homestead Act, which gave white males 160 acres for free to travel out west. And think about it, that's four times the amount of acreage promised to the slaves that was never delivered as well, 40 acres and a mule. In 1862, he signed the Land Grant Act, which would provide land and resources to create colleges and schools to teach agriculture. You get a lot of these A&T names like the Schools of Agriculture and all that kind of stuff, but it was to teach them how to farm that free land. Now, so we're saying this was done in 1862 to allow for 1863. But then in 1863 comes, the slaves are released and they have nothing, and what happens there? But there was labor; they were never paid for this. You know,
okay,
the slave owners and their
let me just stipulate to the maltreatment and the theft and the inhibition of being able to create wealth. Get in a time machine. So we're in 2021, and you're saying what, $2 trillion dollars from every nation that participated in the transatlantic slave trade, and then you'll figure out how to divvy it up to all Black Americans or all Black Americans who are descendants of slaves.
Yeah, give me my money. Is that
what you're saying? Essentially, $2 trillion, and you think distributing that among 40 million Black Americans, let's say. Whatever that number is, let's just round numbers. Let's say it's $100,000 per Black American, or $250,000 or $500,000. I don't really care what the number is. The point is, I'm getting to is, whatever the number is, you think that's going to provide closure on these racial issues, particularly for those whose business model is inflaming racial animus.
Well, Germany is different for providing reparations to Israel, the citizens. At least they can say, this is what we're doing with Israel, with the billions of dollars that we've put towards them so far. So, the Holocaust, the African Holocaust predates the Jewish Holocaust, and it is much longer, in terms of, the centuries, as it were. And so all I'm saying is that, we don't need anyone to decide how it's going to be distributed.
However it's distributed, the pile of money is and however it's distributed, you think that would be an event that would precipitate closure on the issue of slavery, the mistreatment of Blacks throughout American history, and the racial tensions that exist in America today? You think that's where closure comes?
I think if Black folk who qualify in terms of this whole reparations piece that I'm talking about, if they can look in their accounts and see $100,000 or $500,000 or $1 million, if King and those guys calculated that 40 acres and a mule was like worth like $6 trillion back in 1960, you spent $6 trillion over those Blacks who qualify that, people that identify as being Black, Negro, African-American, for a certain number of years, not just jumping into the pool. We could check their applications and everything else. Did you check other or did you check Black, But it is, would that make a difference? Yeah, it makes a difference,
I know it makes a difference, but making a difference,
and
I think
it will bring closure, a level of closure, yes. You can talk to husbands and wives. The number one problem that marriages have is finance, right? Mm-hmm. So finance in terms of Blacks and whites in this country, we are the estranged, in some ways, family. We have been family in this country for a long time. And those things that have created tensions between us are real, factual, right? They're discoverable. And things that can be remedied. And so, because other people, we started this thing together, Dan. We did. We started this thing together. And so when I hear things like BIPOC and all that, that's cool. I had a gentleman yesterday. We shut down 3rd Avenue, 42nd and 3rd yesterday, right here in New York City. I had a gentleman, a Jewish gentleman. He began to scream at me from the sidewalk because I'm in the street, Dan. You know how we do it. And he says, and I got like 80 cops around me, NYPD. They wouldn't arrest me. And I don't know why. But he screams at me. He says, what about my? He says, I'm Jewish. He says, I'm Jewish. What about my people? And I said, sir, why is it whenever we bring up Black issues, someone always has to say, but what about? I said, this is the Black demonstration. When you have the Jewish one, invite me and I will support you. I said, but sir, don't you know that Israel has received reparations from Germany? I said, can't we do the same? He was real mad and all this kind of stuff. But what I want to say, Dan, but the other side of the closure is the resentment that will come that happens from this. Because, this is 2021, and a lot of people will be upset that, okay, now these Black folks who were not in slavery, now they have this money. But see, that's because they're thinking emotionally and thinking in terms of their own personal journey and struggle, on the planet.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Barack Obama said that. He said, look, I didn't, you know, I'm not talking about him politically, if you will. But he said, I didn't bring up the reparations thing because of resentment and resistance from white people. But I understand that. All of a sudden, you live next door, to a black guy, you know, and everything. Next thing you know, this black guy just got $500,000, you know, bam. You know, so then everybody starts digging into their past. What am I owed? But the difference is, Dan, is that, you know, white people would have to say, you know, that if I was in indentured servitude and I'm from Ireland or I'm from some other country or whatever, you need to go back to that country. And what I'm saying is that we as black people don't really have that. You know, I'm not half Irish and half Dutch. I'm half Arkansas and half Louisiana, man. I'm quintessentially American, right? Mm-hmm. And so where do I go to? But where I go to is that the Dutch were a slave trading juggernaut. And so when you have, you know, from New York to Rotterdam Port and all this, these banks and all these things, they were built on the backs of black-skinned slaves. Great Britain, Britain's pre-capitalist accumulation of wealth was based on the hunting and trading of black-skinned slaves that financed their industrialization. Slavery financed industrialization in all these countries. Slavery is the economic engine of empires.
There's a little bit of historical context that you're getting to that is otherwise largely absent from this discussion. And, of course, you know, there's a good piece actually on this in Touchstone magazine by R.V. Young, who's a former English professor at NC State. And he reminds us that before the first Portuguese trader set foot on the shores of West Africa in the 15th century, kingdoms in sub-Saharan Africa were enslaving their conquered enemies, selling them to buyers in the north of Africa, in Asia Minor, in India, and the coastal lands of Eastern Mediterranean Europe, and so forth. And so you get into this lack of context and, frankly, the eradication of slavery, which came to the West thanks largely because of Christianity and the incompatibility of slavery with being a devotee of Christ. But
Christianity was used to justify with the Hamitic apostles.
Well, I understand. I understand. Cursed, you know? I understand. But ultimately, too, I mean, finding its own end was something rather unique in the West. As we know, slavery still exists in parts of the world today.
Yeah.
And so it's just that lack of historical context and the precedent that it would set, I think, is just more troublesome than you're giving credit.
Well, I'll say this to you. The Songhai Empire, right? The Songhai Empire is one of the great Western states, Western African states. And so in 1591, Jamestown and Sullivan's Port in South Carolina, Jamestown's got 50% of the slaves. Sullivan's Port got 40%. So but the Songhai Empire in 1591, they sold some of their prisoners of war, to slave traders. And they brought these folks to Sullivan's Port in 1591. But these were prisoners of war. These were not people that had been prepared, as it were, to become slaves. And so these prisoners of war that were sold by the Songhai Western African, you know, state empire, they could not be handled or dealt with. And so what they then did is they traveled to Germany to find out how to break humans so that you could properly enslave them. So then you go from 1591, just one of many examples, right, to 1619, because slavery is a science. You know, there's a great Latin word.
Greg, I'm sorry. This is a great discussion, but I've lost track of time here. We got to jump. But Reverend Gregory,
I miss you, Dan.
Levingston. I know. Well,
you guys go out to lunch or Zoom.
Well,
Zoom
or Florida. Maybe you should meet me in Florida. I don't want to go to New York and
The Netherlands.
I want to leave Chicago like everybody else. The Netherlands. We'll go to Amsterdam together.
Yeah, go to the red light district. It'll be great.
Reverend Gregory Levingston, we'll continue this conversation. It's a good one. It always is. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
A pleasure, man. Yes, sir. Amy.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and just Dan, not Big Dan. because Big Dan is running for Congress in Texas as 6th, and he's aiming to go to D.C. and kick the snot out of everybody, which probably be a good start.
Three dirtiest jobs in the world: professional wrestling, politician, and bull riding. Let's go, boys!
We call that bull Nancy Pelosi. It's the beast.
Now that's Texas tough, baby. 2 out of 3 dirty jobs done. I'm Big Dan Roedheimer. Texas has big problems. We need a big fighter to solve those problems. The communists in D.C. are ruining America. We have a big problem. Texas, send Big Dan to Congress. I know how to handle Nancy Pelosi and stop her bull. And I'll put a boot.
You get, you know where he's going to put that boot, too. We're pleased to be joined by a Republican candidate for Congress. This is the special election that was necessitated by the passing of Representative Ron Wright in Texas's 6th, a crowded primary field, including Big Dan Roedheimer, as you just heard. Big Dan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me.
Well, your campaign video is, well, it's gone viral. It's very colorful, one of the colorful campaign videos of the season early on here. How's the campaign going, and why did you go from WWE to running for Congress?
The video definitely put us on the map, and that's what it's about. It's about having a big voice. You know, the WWE, you know, put me in front of, you know, tons of people. And it was able to send me off to be able to do greater things. I was from the WWE after I broke my neck, went to law school, and then I was a small business owner. All these things I'm going to bring to Congress. And right now, David, you know, we're running against a bunch of Sesame Street conservatives, you know, and too much talk and not enough action. And that's what we needed in D.C.
Sesame Street. Wait, what's a Sesame Street conservative? I just want to make sure I understand the appellation correctly.
The pretend Republican, David.
Pretend
Sesame Street conservative. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought I was on the
same day. Yeah, that's all right. It's, you know, I'm just a Chicago guy. You got bigger problems to worry about Texas. don't worry about getting my name right. Now, is Vince McMahon, did he help you put together that video, or the production guys at WWE is pretty good?
Yeah. You know, he didn't, but, you know, we had a great team. You know, we rode that bull for 11 seconds. A lot of folks over at CNN and Inside Edition and all the other stations that interviewed us this week tried to bash me on it. But, hey, I stayed on for 11 seconds. The only reason being is because, you know, I got my hand stuck in the rope and I couldn't get off sooner.
It's better than Luke Perry, God rest his soul. Yes. So tell us about this race, because I noted that a Republican named Michael Wood, who's running in this race, was just endorsed by the Dallas Morning News, and he's reportedly an anti-Trump Republican. So give us a handle on this race and what you think your chances are.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I never even heard of that guy. But this is, okay. You know, this is a very, very important race. You know, like I said earlier, I mean, obviously we need bulls in the congressional China shop, and that's what I'm going to bring to this race and to Congress. You know, it comes down to stopping Pelosi's agenda and, you know, making sure that she doesn't take over Texas. Obviously, we all know if Texas goes, America goes. You know, this is the Alamo, this is the last stronghold, and we need fighters to go up there and fight. You know, these videos that we're doing, we're going to be doing another one in a couple of weeks. We're going to be doing a 2A one. And that one's going to go viral, too. Hopefully, they don't take me off all my social media platforms. But, you know, this is how you get out on Fox News and on OAN and on, you know, every station across the board like we did. And then we talk about the issues, and it's about messaging. You know, the issues are right now, all these other candidates talk, you know, the standard issue. You know, I'm pro-life, you know, less taxes, less regulations. But what are they doing? They're not doing anything. You know, in the past week, Dan, you know, I went down to the border. I wrote a bill, which is actually on our website, danroedheimer.com, if you want to donate. And we also talked to a number of the angel moms. You know, these other people running, hey, were they on CNN bashing Pelosi? No.
But that's what we're doing. We're trying to get things done and get prepped and get ready. So when we're up there, we're going to make a difference.
So, Big Dan, what did you see when you went down to the border? They let you in anywhere?
It was heartbreaking. You know, I went down there, and I'm a tough guy. You know, being 6'7", 300 pounds, you know, I don't cry often. But when I talked to some of these angel moms down there, and they told me their stories about their children being killed by illegal aliens, you know, that's what, you know, gave me the idea to, you know, we need to codify President Trump's Remain in Mexico policy into law. You know, these are things President Trump did a great job with his policies. And even a lot of Republicans, you know, don't even talk about how great, you know, the policies the president did or don't want to continue his America First agenda. And, you know, shame on them. And that's why we need folks to go out there to have a backbone, to have the courage of their conviction, stand tall to the establishment and fight Pelosi's regime up there.
And just for people, you know, obviously a lot of people in Chicago are familiar with Texas, but the 6th Congressional District is like south, southeast Dallas-Fort Worth area?
Yes. Yes. Arlington, Mansfield.
Okay. The border issue, you know, this becomes a big one with the story out over the weekend that the number of illegal migrants arrested at the border is at a 15-year high. So this is not just a seasonal thing, as Joe Biden and his administration has tried to recast it as. And obviously, being a border state like Texas with, 1,800 miles of southern border, it's a big issue.
It absolutely is. I mean, we had 100,000 illegal aliens come over in February. This month, we've had 178% increase. Like you said, biggest surge in 15 years. You know, we need to protect our borders. The problem is, you know, Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi are putting illegal aliens first and America last. And that's not going to cut it for me.
Yeah. What do you think about
you ride your? Did you ride your bull to the border?
I didn't ride the bull down there.
All right.
Well, I was going to ask you.
And you didn't? Did you? You didn't write a bill while you were on your bull. You didn't write that.
I do it all.
Well, I was going to ask because your governor was making news yesterday because he said no to throwing out the first pitch for the Rangers game. He wishes the Texas Rangers well, but he said he had to fight back, you know, against the Major League Baseball for what they did to Georgia. And do you stand with him on that?
Can you believe the Major League Baseball, what they did in Georgia? You know, the Democrats are just crybabies. They come out there and, oh, well, we didn't get our way, so we're going to pull the baseball game, you know, from Georgia. It's baloney. It's absolutely baloney. And, you know, that's what the far left is doing. You know, it's anything they could do to cancel culture.
Yep.
Do you think, like, Jesse the Body Ventura paved the way for your candidacy? By any chance, was he a pioneer for
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Wrestlers going into politics? Well, wrestlers into politics.
Yes, you're going to see a lot more. You know what? You're going to see a lot more athletes coming out. Look at Glenn Jacobs, Kane from the WWE. He endorsed us. He's actually coming out here. If you guys want to make your way out here on the 17th, we're doing a WWE-style wrestling event. And that's what we need to do. We need to, you know, build our party. We need to do outreach. That's what I'm coming here to do. In this particular district, people don't talk about it, but, you know, in 2012, Romney won this district by 17. In 2016, Trump won it by 12. In 2020, Trump only won it by 3 points, right? And you can see these numbers continue to decrease. We need somebody that can go out there and do outreach. And you know, and it comes down to stopping Pelosi's agenda against Texas.
Yeah.
And that's why we're having this WWE event.
Yeah, or at least scare the hell out of the constituents, keep them in line. One of the two, right?
So you're going to be wrestling at this event, Big Dan?
Oh, I won't be wrestling. We have a lot of superstars coming. But we have, you know, it's one way to bring together Republicans, Democrats, independents, you know, across the board and grow this party. You know, if you talk to these folks and they're open to listen, which, you know, they're coming to our event, then you can get them to come over and understand the issues.
Will any of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling be at this event by any chance? No.
Well, I hope so. They better be included.
We have
part of the show.
Yeah, we do.
I'm a Glow fan. I know.
Glow, yeah.
See, Dan knows. Yeah. Dan, you should go and get visited and get part of the SmackDown. What would your wrestling name be, Dan?
Dan, you want to come out there and drop the elbow?
No, I would be more like a leaping Lanny Poffo, the poet laureate of wrestling. I'd maybe throw some frisbees around, but not a lot of physical contact for me.
Well, Dan, we could be a tag team. We could call us Double D's.
and they are real.
We'll take a folding chair.
Perfect.
Between the two of us, we'll take a folding chair right to the establishment.
And I'll get a staple gun out for you guys.
You know what? I'll be your Danny the Brain Heenan. I'll be your manager, Big Dan. I'll just stay outside the ring and you do your thing. How about that?
Love it.
I'm going April 17th, right?
Please come on out.
You know, April 17th, we're going to be down here in Mansfield. It's a free event, so we're expecting to have a lot of people there. You can go on to danrodheimer.com, take a look at it. You can also watch the video on danrodheimer.com. And if you want to donate, hey, help us fight. Sorry, by the way, that's my 6 month old here. She's actually sitting on my lap as we're doing this interview.
Is that a child or a calf?
We're growing big out here.
Well, I'll tell you, I like the idea of WWE guys getting into politics. Anything to keep John Cena off the silver screen, you know, have him run for office or something. I can't see him in movies. He's just a terrible actor. So just, you know, so get these guys into politics. It's better. I like it.
I think we need more. You know, we need people that are outside the swamp. You know, to get involved. This race alone, I mean, we got everybody that's in this race is running against me. Of course, I'm the only one they're attacking. But, you know, the good thing is when you're being attacked, what does that mean? It means you're winning.
Yep.
So, you know, I want them to keep attacking me. You know, people don't want the same old, same old. They don't want these people that have been in the swamp for 15 years running or, you know, I tell everybody you're not gonna vote for somebody just because they're a state legislator and you voted for them in the past. You're not gonna vote for somebody because they're the widow of a congressman. You're not gonna vote for somebody because they're a former WWE pro wrestler. You're gonna vote for the person who has your morals, your ethics, who's gonna go up and stand tall and be your fighter. And that's what you have to look at in this particular race. And this is a very, very important race. We need to keep this seat. We need to hold it.
I think that's right. And so there's no Republican congressman up our way. So you might as well take a look at Big Dan Rodheimer down in Texas. Dan Rodheimer, R-O-D-I-M-E-R, danrodheimer.com. Check it out. Big Dan, thanks so much for joining us and good luck.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. I'm following him on Twitter, too, Dan R-O-D-I-M-E-R. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.